Good evening, welcome to the Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors meeting on Wednesday, October 16th. Like to have Ashley, would you like to give Director Porter, would you please give the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have roll call.
Roll call been taken, let the record show that all members are present with the exception of President Callahan, who is absent, and Director Graves is joining remotely.
Excellent. We're now going into public comment. During this time, you are welcome to come to the podium, state your name, and talk about anything that is not on the agenda for 3 minutes.
Good evening. My name is Thomas Rohrer. I'm a 15-year member of Carpenters Local 152, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak on some of the values as a union member we hold dear. Such as our dedication to a statewide apprenticeship program, fair and livable wages for all our industry, with a focus on employing local carpenters, and a comprehensive health care plan. Our apprenticeship program is integral to our core beliefs, ensuring that the next generation of carpenters is properly skilled and trained. Along with our commitment to training the next generation, we also take pride in advocating for local hire to help ensure that the people that live in our community are the ones that build it too. What good is building our community if you can't afford to live in it? That said, it is imperative that a fair and livable wage can be had. Lastly, another cornerstone of our beliefs is providing a comprehensive health care plan for our members and their families. These are some of the ways we can enrich, build, and ensure a prosperous future for our community. Thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to speak tonight about some of the core values we as carpenters believe in. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else would like to come up?
Rob Martinson. Some comments about Cornell Park. That great, the bathrooms are open and working fantastic. If possible, it'd be nice to have a little plaque saying, what time are they open? You know, do they open at 7, 8? I was there one time and 7, they were closed. I think maybe they opened at 8. In the summertime, the park was filled with people at 7 walking their dogs. And I don't know if they're open on the weekends every day, 7 days a week. Because people just kind of question it or play pickleball or tennis, like, you know, when are they open? But it's great to have them open. Number two, we're not done with the trucks doing donuts in the park. 2 weeks ago, another one went out at 11 o'clock at night. A white four-door, I think Ford pickup. I saw a video of it when we went by my house, but in the dark and all that, nothing that you could rely on, no license plate or anything like that. And just the thought that maybe I've heard some rumors about spending more money on the kids' play area doing something. I think we're still going to need some sort of barrier, partial little 2-foot wall, maybe some of those concrete blocks that you have on Clifford that are benches. Something to help keeping the trucks off the lawn. I talked to a few locals, not mentioned names, and maybe had that under control, but apparently it didn't work. Third thing on the park is the tripping on the concrete. Some months back, somebody went out and painted yellow paint on all the areas where they're raised up like there were years ago that you ground down. And I kind of heard that maybe somebody, board or whatever, didn't like that, and they sprayed them over with gray paint. Well, everybody said,
I'm sorry, sprayed them over with what?
With gray paint.
Gray paint, okay.
You know, didn't like the bright yellow paint to expose the tripping hazard. You know, I know they're there, and I've tripped on them. Of course, I'm a woman, who knows? And people were commenting how nice, and I said, well, they're working on maybe grinding them down again. It's been months. And my concern is that you have a known hazard, and you've tried to hide it with paint. Not being an attorney, but I think, man, what a liability. You've been sued once, and you lost to Nancy that really hurt herself tripping out there. And now you have them trying to hide them again instead of like, hey, be careful here. Just, I don't see why you didn't try to hide them. And that was it.
Thank you. And is anyone on the line with public comment?
There are no hands raised.
Okay, and with that, we will end public comment and go to consent calendar.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Buteau?
Aye.
Director Graves? Director Graves?
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Are you there? Can you?
Aye.
We heard you.
All right, now let's go on to presentations. Veolia, would you like to come on up?
Good evening, everyone. I'm here to give the monthly presentation for the water and wastewater system for data collected for the month of September. On our first slide, we are working our way back up to our famous 5,000. We're chugging away at 448 safe working days. We focused on Headwater Review, plant walkthrough, and Veolia globally in 48 countries celebrated Global Safety Week, where we all band together as communities and as a company as a whole and do different things for safety. It walks through the plant, things like that. So had a really good turnout, a lot of improvements coming for Wastewater Plant 2. And as soon as our contractors are done at Willow, we're going to bring some of those improvements to the Willow, to the water plant too. So on the next slide, our water system's running fairly well. Nothing really out of trend this time of year. It's slowly but surely started cooling off a little, and then it jumped back up into the hundreds again. So the water plants are running pretty even. Well, 5 is still offline. This time next month, you will see that filter 1 is actually in operation now, as of now. But for September's reporting, technically it was still offline. So real good improvement for the town. And we're already maybe seeing a benefit from that money spent on the system.
So is that project done? Have they finished everything there?
They're doing some final touch-ups on the project, but probably by the end of this month or next report, it'll be done.
Great.
On the next slide, you can look at our trends over the last 12 months. So you can see as the month of September, we're starting to slow down just a little bit on water usage, but we're still pretty high. October, we expect to see probably the same thing we saw last year, pretty good drop. So that's pretty good. That gives our pumps and all of our assets a chance to calm down on the water system side. And so nothing really out of the ordinary to show. On the next slide, we are getting into the cool time of the year, so we will start doing hydrant flushing more active. And because have not been in a drought or a mandate from the state, we will unidirectional flush all hydrants from the plants all the way to the dead ends this year. So that will see us a lot more active this year flushing hydrants. If anybody asks, that is a requirement that we do annually. The only reason the residents didn't see us last year was because of the government mandated drought.
What's involved in the valve exercising?
So well, we do most of the valve exercising when we do hydrant flushing, because there's a large majority of the valves are controlling the hydrants. However, there's a large majority of ground valves within the system that we also exercise. Literally, we go out to the valves, turn them, completely shut them, count the turns, completely open them, count the turns to make sure that they're actually fully operational. If town staff's crew sees a leak or emergency response on the water system, if they don't have those valves at work, it may mean the difference in shutting a couple of houses off with blow notice or half the town. So they can be very, very critical, but we have to be careful that when we're exercising, we don't break them, because then we got another problem. So it takes us a while. We have a little over 3,000 valves in the system, so that's a lot of valves. And a lot of them, almost all of them, are in the middle of the streets. So that's what we try to kill two birds with one stone and get the majority of them when we flush hydrants. All of our sampling, consumer conference reports done, the copper sampling is done, no water quality complaints last month, no violations. On the next slide. For the wastewater system, all of our lift stations are active. We still got lift station Y, our bypass station offline. We plan to probably swap that in November and let it run and take over for influent pump station for a couple of months. So the new bar screens, the town investment, are doing wonderful. Almost all of the rags through the system is getting collected at the influent pump station and is not even making it to wastewater plant 2, which is saving us a ton on the assets, the damage that they cause to the assets inside the treatment plant. So we're really seeing all of it accumulate and get hauled out of here, which is we're much better than what we had before.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. How often do one of your staff guys have to go over there and clean it out?
Every day. It's got its own automatic mechanism, and the dumpster is coming once a week to fill it up, and in a week, that one dumpster at info pump station is completely full. So that's a full dumpster load a week that's not getting in the plant. So that's pretty good.
Good news.
On the next slide, the wastewater effluent numbers, and effluent numbers are pretty good. We're daily average is about 1.25 million. Total flow this time last year was 32.7, and this year we're at 32.4, so pretty close to normal. And then all of our numbers are looking good, even. If you look at y'all's favorite number, at this time, now this is September's sample results, so not counting October, November, and December, we've still got three more samples we can collect in 2024, and right now we're at an average of 2229. As long as we stay under 2400, we won't exceed the current permit limit, and as we discussed last month, and the new permit, that is no longer limited.
And that's effective January 1st.
That's
exciting.
On the next slide, you can see basically what we've been seeing. Wastewater is flowing pretty normal for this time of year. Pretty close to the same all year, except for pretty much July, or if we have a rain event. And then on the last slide, no wastewater customer complaints, no overflows. We are still showing 210 tons hauled for our biosolids. We do have another, we just hauled again, and we're waiting on the report from the landfill, so that number will probably be done by the end of the year. So we're hauling a lot of solids up to try to catch up and empty the lagoons as fast as we can. So our lift station cleanouts are about 60%, SRAS 90%. We're still waiting, we're going to work with the town to do Discovery Boulevard in Newport, and those are our most dangerous areas when we SRAT those lines in the middle of the main drags like that. So we work with the town to do that. And then we are almost done with painting and labeling of all of our assets. So if you go to the wells, if you go to the plants and stuff, everything has been painted. They looked wonderful for about 2 weeks, and then the birds decided to paint them themselves.
Sounds about right.
Good report. Yeah. Any questions from the board?
No.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
All right. Next, discussion and possible action. We are going to have a discussion and possible action to approve the contract with Harrison Associates.
Yes. Okay. So the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, generally requires state and local government agencies to inform government decision makers and the public about the potential environmental impacts of proposed projects and to reduce those environmental impacts to the extent feasible. The town of Discovery Bay is in the design planning phase with Mobile Modular to construct a new administrative office building at the Discovery Bay Community Center. The proposed administrative office building is a discretionary action that falls under the definition of a project under CEQA. As a result, the town is required to comply with CEQA and determine the appropriate CEQA documentation. Mobile Modular must submit the design for review by Contra Costa County. As stated, CEQA is intended to inform county decision makers and the public about the potential environmental effects of proposed activities and to prevent significant avoidable environmental damage. This determination is necessary while the building is in the design phase. The proposed project scope of work includes developing a project description and determining the appropriate CEQA documentation. The consulting firm Harris & Associates has proposed preparing the CEQA documentation for the new administrative office building at the Discovery Bay Community Center. This item before you tonight was presented for discussion and possible feedback at the October 2nd Water and Wastewater Committee meeting, which was a non-Brown Act meeting. Staff recommends that the board approve the proposal with Harris & Associates, Inc. to prepare the CEQA documentation for the new administrative office building at the community center location. This will ensure compliance with CEQA requirements and facilitate the successful completion of the proposed project. Ms. Kate Elliott, Director of Environmental Planning and Compliance, is on the line if the board has any technical questions about the CEQA process. Ms. Elliott has completed other CEQA determinations for past Discovery Bay projects. Thank you.
Board, do you have any questions for Kate Elliott?
No, I mean, it's a pretty standard operating procedure for anything with CEQA. We're going to have to do it no matter what we do. So,
Kate, are you on the phone? Are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good evening, everybody.
Hi. So, I'm sure you're familiar now with this project that we're going to be doing. In your experience, have you run into any issues doing something? It seems, just as Director Porter was saying, it seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it is pretty straightforward, and it's so straightforward that, you know, we do want to explore the use of a categorical exemption. It just involves a little research and legwork to see if it might fall under an exemption. Exemptions, there's a certain exemption, class 3, for new construction or conversion of small structures. So it's about an approximately 7,000 square foot facility, which the exemption doesn't apply to things that are over 2,500 unless it can be considered like urbanized area. And that's where it gets a little gray. We just want to dig in and consult with our in-house CEQA attorney to see if an argument, a fair argument can be made to qualify for that exemption. If not, then we're prepared to prepare a CEQA initial study mitigated neg deck.
So I have a question on that. If there is an exemption and it's determined that that exemption is something that we can apply for, the benefit to us is saving us some money on that $46,320 for
yes.
the CEQA?
Okay. Yeah, you end up being basically exempt from the process, but then what we would recommend doing, you could just fill out a form and file it and be done, but especially in gray areas like this, we recommend preparing a supporting memorandum that would go through and explain why this particular exemption applies and why none of the six exceptions to using an exemption, why they don't apply. So it would just go through and provide you with some rationale documentation for your administrative record, but it would not need to go through public review like an ISMND or initial study mitigated neg deck would. And that, yeah, so it would save you
some
about $40,000 if we can make the exemption work.
Perfect, thank you.
Okay, let's do that.
We'll do our best.
Dina, just for clarification, the building itself is not 7,000 square feet. That's the area impacted?
No, I believe that's the building. That's 7,000 square feet.
I thought it was a much smaller footprint.
Okay. Well, part of the exercise, the first task in doing that and exploring it will be to develop a project description with enough detail to answer those questions.
Is there any public comment? Craig?
There are no hands raised.
Okay, no hands raised. All right, well, let's bring it back to the board. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve staff's recommendation.
I second.
Okay, roll call vote.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Gattow?
Aye.
Director Graves? Director Graves?
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Grant?
Aye. Yes. So with that, the motion carries. Okay. All right. Let's go on to number two, discussion of possible action to approve the contract with Stantec Engineering Services Company.
Gregory Harris is on the line to present this item.
Okay, Gregory?
Gregory Harris, Herod Engineering, District Engineer for the town of Discovery Bay. And before you is a motion to approve a contract for Stantec Engineering to do some additional wastewater modeling and testing for us at the town. The people that are here today were not there, but in 2012, the board approved Stantec to develop a sewer model that models the sewer system in the town so that we can assess capacity and assess overflow potential and things like that in the sewer system. And that was required by the Regional Water Quality Control Board back in 2012. So that model was developed, but it was developed in sort of the light of, hey, the state requires us to do a model, and a model was developed, and it was briefly checked, and then kind of put on the shelf and sort of left there. However, recently we've got a lot of developers coming to the town saying we want to hook up to the sewer system, we want to tie out of the sewer system, we want to change land use and things. And it comes back to questions about they all want a will serve letter from the town. Well, there's two elements to the will serve. One is, can we physically treat the wastewater at the wastewater treatment plant? The towns are very good about proactively managing and assessing that and expanding that. But we haven't really paid much attention to the sewer collection system because we haven't had a lot of new development, but that new development is here now. And we've had several questions where we've gone back and pulled up the old model and dusted it off and taken a look at what people are asking and realized there's some definite calibration issues with the old model. And we, in some cases, had spent a lot of extra time, a lot of extra money and expense trying to understand, can the town truly support one of the developers at a particular location in the collection system? And we realized that the model was over-predicting rainfall events and the impact on the sewer system. And so in working with Stantec through that process, we kind of came to the conclusion the best thing going forward would be to do some calibration of that model by actually taking measurements of wastewater flows in the town during wet weather events and at key locations throughout the town to better assess the ability of the model to predict what's going on in the town collection system. Once we do that, we can update the model, and then we have an active model going forward that we can use to answer questions about potential overflow locations in the town, as well as its ability to support specific projects at specific locations. So for instance, across the street from the community center, can you put in 300 units? If that's what people propose. You know, those kinds of questions become difficult if we don't know the capacity of the sewer system. And that sewer system is impacted by all the lift stations and all the gravity lines that flow through it. So what we're proposing is to have Stantec come out, install flow monitors in key manholes. We have to do it before winter starts so we can collect some events when it rains, take that information back and update the model. Then, as part of that, they go ahead and give us a capacity assessment of the collection system, identify any potential problem areas. And then we have an active model going forward to use to answer questions for developers. The other thing I'd like to point out is, since the original model was built, several developments have come along, Fantasia, Newport Point, and I think Village 5, and they're not in the model at all. So our model is sort of incomplete, if you would think about that, and it would be good for us to update from that. The reason that is important is because the town is also separately pursuing a GIS system. And a GIS system is a graphical information system that relies on a background information to be provided to it. Someone's got to gather the information, gather the background, gather the pipes, put it in a format the GIS system can use. Well, that's the same thing you have to do to develop a hydraulic model. So this work that would go forth to develop and improve the hydraulic model would also be used a little bit to pick up these subdivisions and things that aren't connected to our system yet electronically in our model and use it as a base for our GIS system. So our recommendation is that we proceed quickly to get Stantec on board prior to this winter. We do our modeling and do our measurements and complete our modeling next spring.
Any questions from the board?
I have a question about how long the modeling lasts, because it sounds like we've done some modeling like in 2012. We're getting ready to redo it. Once it's done, how long do we think that that's going to last? Or is there a way to do an update to the modeling based on developments and stuff like that so we're not in a situation where we're having to update it to this extent?
That's a good question. So the first thing was, how long does the model last? The first thing we had to do was convert it to modern software, because the model was 2012, it's 2024, right? So it's more than 12 years old. Software changes over time, right? That wasn't difficult. That converted right away. The knowledge of where the pipes are, how big the pipes are, how long the pipes are, how many manholes they are, that knowledge stays forever, because that is what you're trying to model. So once you gather that information, you never lose that. In this particular instance, there's assumptions made about how leaky your sewer is, how leaky the pipes are, how much water comes in the sewer system when it rains. Those are kicked into the model because that happens in real life. Now, some people's systems are much older and have different pipe quality than other people's systems. So there's built-in assumptions like, if it rains this much, 25% of the rain's gonna come into the collection system. Maybe that's true for one community, but it might be 50 or 100% in another community, or it might be 10% in another community. When we figure this out, I think that information's gonna stay relevant. So I think the model would still be relevant today had it been properly calibrated before, but we did not have time nor the money in 2012 to go out and do actual measurements of what happened in the sewer system. We didn't do it. So I think that this information stays relevant for a long time going forward, and the pipes aren't going to change size, the manholes aren't going to change size. Once we add the missing subdivisions in that aren't out now, they're going to be in the model. I think
the model
will be relevant for quite a few years until something changes in the development.
Thank you.
Hey, Gregory, Brian Gateau. Maybe you can help me understand this a little better. So it sounds like the developments that are already in place, Pantages, Village 5, and Newport, whether they're part of the model or not, it's not going to change our infrastructure. Let's help us understand better. It sounds like, if I heard you correctly, this new modeling is only really for new development. And if that's the case, why don't we put the onus on any potential developers who want to create a project here? And maybe.
Yeah. So if you see in the back the fiscal impact, yes, we might be fronting a little bit of the money, but it will be funded by the developers when they ask for the model. So then we would charge them for it. So then you would get your reimbursement from us.
If the developers move forward. Developers don't move forward, then...
No, not necessarily, because they need that model to make their determination if they're going to move forward.
Okay.
So they're going to need that.
That's okay, and I'm just trying to understand how the process works.
That's my understanding. So Gregory, correct me if I'm incorrect, please.
Yeah, so for instance, we've had developers come to us, which has happened twice this recently. And for that project across the street from the community center, they're like, hey, can we hook up? And we're like, hey, we're not sure, because it's confusion about what's exactly going on in the collection system. We need to do some modeling. We would need a deposit from you to pay for that model. And they agreed to a deposit. We took their money and then we did some hand modeling. So what Dina is saying is, when developers come and say, hey, I got this sort of change of land use that I want to put in here, can you take it? They have to put a little money into the town to analyze that. And we take that money and we use that to help pay for the upgrades in the model. So it's basically coming out of developer fees. eventually. Now, that being said, where we are required by the state to keep an accurate model and understand where potential overflow conditions exist in our system, right? That's why the model was originally built. So it is a dual purpose. We should be well understanding where there are limitations in our collection system, and we should know where they are. So Veolia should know where they are, so that when there's issues, they're aware of where to go look. In addition, developers need information about, hey, if you change the land use here, we add mixed-use residential, mixed-use commercial, are you going to be able to take it? We need the ability to answer that, too. So both things are true, but we are planning, and we have in the past, charged developers for if we need additional engineering or modeling or things like that to help understand the development.
That makes sense. I guess part of my question was just more for if people are listening in online or later want to listen, they could understand that, you know, we can't use that as a denial mechanism because we're obligated to provide the developers clear information.
Any public comment? Any other questions? We want to go to a vote.
I make a motion to approve staff's recommendations.
Second.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director
Buteau? Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Grant?
Aye. And with that, the motion passes. And now we will go on to a possible agreement with Monarch Landscaping for the Clipper Drive improvements.
Have a good day, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Gregory.
Bye, Gregory.
So here to discuss continuing improvements on Clipper. So we've been continually working to make improvements along Clipper. Currently, when Clipper was done, a composite edging was installed in the area to separate the walking path, the different gravels, the bark, that kind of thing. It's a landscape edging that was installed incorrectly and has buckled and come up and is not only an eyesore, but not serving its purpose of keeping everything in and together. And it's got risers and there's nails sticking out. So what the newest product out there that's being used is a metal edging. So the benefits of using, steel edging, is that it doesn't rot or break, it will keep its shape, it won't warp in the heat. Generally, the types of metal that are used for landscaping edging won't wear away. The weatherproof quality makes it popular for using landscaping. We used this product recently when we did the corners of Preston and Point of Timber, and it's staying in place, it was installed properly, and it looks nice, and it's keeping everything kind of in where it should be. So we're hoping this is going to be another area. We were kind of tasked with upgrading the loose gravel that's going everywhere. So this is an option for that will help and look better. And you can see in one of the pictures that's on the actual page of the proposal where you can see what it looks like, the kind of condition that what's currently there is in. So this would come from, we've got CIP funds available for this year, $50,000, earmarked for Clipper Drive. The additional funds would be paid for using the existing reserves. Is there any questions I can?
So the edge of the steel edging, it's not like if a child fell on it or something, it's not sharp.
It's not sharp. No, it's used for landscaping all over.
So can you see us using this steel edging for projects going forward and not going back to the composite edging? It might be cheaper, but if we're going to be replacing it so often, it may not make sense to use.
For any projects I do, I won't use composite edging.
Excellent. Any questions?
This has gone to Parks and Rec, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys were on board with it?
This did not go to Parks and Rec. It kind of came together. Oh, did I go over?
Nope.
It came together. We wanted to get it before the board and get moving on this, because this has been kind of a hot topic on Clipper, and we're okay. working to constantly come up with ways. This is this was the opinion of a couple of different resources that I reached out to go, what can we do here? Let's walk it. Let's look. We're also going to be dipping the edges to lower them. So that will also keep the gravel going. So I think the combination of doing that and taking out all of that composite that's there, I don't know if you've walked it or seen it, but most of it has come out. It's not even in place anymore.
Yeah, so while Parks and Recs didn't come to Parks and Recs tasked Monica to find a solution.
Okay.
So you know that. We were the one that drove, so hey, you know, find something else, that what was put in is not working, and so that's where
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So
you're
fine with this then?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, so we spent a lot of money and a lot of resources developing Clipper Drive, and it's just it's a learning curve, and so
yeah, absolutely.
She found a better solution, and she's a different leader, so I'm gonna go with it and watch her implement it in other areas.
Right. Any public comment? Any
no.
hands raised?
No hands raised.
Okay, and with that, we'll come back. Do we have a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Director Gatto?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Vice President Graham?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, thank you all. Okay, and with that, do we have a manager's report? General manager's report?
Not this evening, thank you.
The director's reports? Correspondence, legal, you got anything you want to bring us up to date on? Okay, I would like to add a future agenda item for MAC for our next meeting regarding the proposed development across the street. So we can discuss, share what information we have found at that point in time, Dina, discuss possibly having a town hall meeting with the Supervisor Burgess, the planning department, and developer. So with this, can we just put it on the agenda, or do we need to vote on it?
Unless there's any sort of disagreement amongst the board, and this is consensus that that's fine, no motions.
Wonderful. And also I would like to have available the contact information of the planner. And unfortunately, I know I'm going to mispronounce his name, Sid Sotude. But I'd like to have this available so people know, the public knows who to send comments to about the development. So I sent that to you tonight, and so if we can make that available so people know who to email.
Yeah, so if we'll bring it up when we talk about it over Mac, and then if people would like the email address of this particular planner, they can fill out a contact us form on our website, and I can send them the information.
Okay, and then Andy, if you could bring us up to date at that same meeting about the Permit Streaming Act, just so we know
yes.
what you have found out. That'd be wonderful. Thank you. And with that, unless there's no other comments, we are adjourning the meeting at 7:38 p.m.